Hi Medical Mums, and welcome to today's episode of Medical Mums Chat. This is Cheryl Chong. Today we will be chatting to Dr. Olivia Ong. Olivia is bravely sharing her story of an accident that she had in 2008, which rendered her a paraplegic, and her journey to learning how to walk again, coming back to medicine, the burnout that ensued, and how she has now used her experience to be a life coach to help other doctors in similar situations deal with burnout. Let's welcome Olivia to today's episode, and we hope you enjoy listening to her story.
Was flung to the sky and fell to the ground with a heavy thud, and I realized that I was seriously very injured. But, you know, having to deal with a spinal cord injury and working pretty much full time and then having my son later on, that took its toll and I eventually burnt out. But I guess I did what a lot of my fellow peers are doing. Like we know our warning signs, we feel it, but we just choose to ignore it and push through it. I struggle with self-worth and self-image because, you know, having to adjust a life in being in you know, in a wheelchair was really quite hard for me. I was suffering from the inside.
Hi, Medical Mums. Today we have the lovely Olivia, who's about to chat to us about her incredible journey, as you'll soon know. So welcome, Olivia, and thank you for coming on the Medical Mums podcast.
Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks for having me.
So should we start with you telling a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Olivia and I'm based in Melbourne, Australia. And I'm a pain physician here. And I work in public and private practice. And I'm a mom of two. So I've got a five-year-old boy, Joe, and a 10-month-old girl, Jacqueline.
Great. Yeah. And you're back at work full-time already now?
Yes, pretty much.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I've been following your Facebook page, and you do a lot of motivational speaking and with doctors, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mainly speak about burnout in doctors, in particular using self-compassion as a tool for them to thrive at work and at home. And not just purely surviving. So my interest in burnout started, I guess, way back. There's a backstory to this. So I went through burnout myself. And let's take it back to 2008. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was a junior doctor, you know, leading a very typical junior doctor life, you know, having to finish a series of, you know, ward tasks by a certain period of time, working unrostered hours.
Probably unpaid.
Unpaid, of course. And, you know, for I ticked all the success boxes. You know, like I have a job. I was happily married and I've got a good network of friends. But I was feeling quite stressed and overwhelmed and quite unfulfilled. Up until a particular one fine spring day in September 2008, I didn't realize that this will be my last day, you know, being an able-bodied person. I was brushing my teeth and rushing to work. You know, I was a rehab registrar at this time. And I finished my ward round with my resident. And then I left around midday because I had to attend a tutorial. So I was on my way, you know, from the car to the tutorial place, which is a rehabilitation hospital here in Melbourne. As I was walking across the car park, little did I realize that the older gentleman with severe dementia reversed into me. So before I knew it, I was flung to the sky and fell to the ground with a heavy thud. And I realized that I was seriously very injured. Well, I did the typical, you know, doctor inventory from head to toe, checking, oh, yeah, I've got, you know, I'm alert, conscious. Yep, I don't have a brain injury. I checked out my arms. I go, yep, I don't have quadriplegia. But then I felt, okay, you know, wasn't able to feel my legs, wasn't able to move my legs either. Then I realized, oh, dear, I must have had something serious, either a pelvic fracture or a spinal cord injury. That particular day, you know, the events happened very quickly. I was whisked off to a tertiary hospital, which is one of the major trauma centers in Melbourne. And I had emergency spinal surgery that very same day. And I spent about, in total, 4 months in the acute hospital and the rehabilitation hospital in total. The irony of it was that I was a rehabilitation registrar and I ended up being a rehab patient. That was
the same place you worked.
Yeah, exactly. The same place I was. So that was awkward and ironical at the same time. But I guess my perspective was changed. I think, like, when I was a junior doctor, I didn't have any self-compassion. Like, I was just going on autopilot. I didn't even know what mindfulness awareness was. Like, pretty much, I think a lot of junior doctors do that. They just go on autopilot and do their day-to-day things.
And do you think it's just a survival mode for a lot of us at that point in our lives?
Exactly. As doctors, we've been programmed as lone rangers, I think pretty much since med school. Asking for help means a sign of weakness, like a sign that we're not competent. So from us as a medical student, we are very shy to ask for help, even among our own peers, because we'll be perceived as incapable or incompetent. So that kind of programming probably continued on as an intern, junior doctor, even as a registrar and fellow. I remember that particular programming was still in my mind and was probably a big part of why I burnt out. And I'm sure a lot of doctors can relate that this is probably a reason why they all burnt out, because they were afraid to ask for help. And burnout still considered a stigma. Even in not just Australia, in the United States, where I've connected with quite a number of physicians who have had a burnout experience, and now they are setting, I guess, as role models, promoting wellness and doctors' well-being, not only just among their peers, they're actually talking to like organizations, healthcare insurers, like which are, you know, Case Permanente and all these big companies. They're just trying to promote in their own way to be wellness advocates, perhaps.
But do you think this stigma of, like you said, asking for help and allowing people to see weakness, is it something that is perpetuated top down? Or is it something that's just so ingrained in medicine, we just get absorbed into its folds without realizing it's happening?
I think it's a bit of both, Cheryl. It's a bit of our programming, and it's also top down. So if we admit that we're in burnout, what will our seniors tell us? It'll be like, oh, you know, in my time, I went through something similar. You gotta just put up with it, you know, or else you won't get a job here next year or something, you know. Like, because I guess as registrars, we were so afraid that we'll get like bad feedback or performance reviews from our bosses, because we obviously want to apply for fellowship positions in that particular hospital or elsewhere. So we probably won't admit that we are burning out and we need help, you see. So I think even the colleges are starting to recognize it. I came across the RACP, which is the Royal College of Physicians. They've got a program on self-care and burnout. So I was quite happy to see that. I was just trying to update my CPD points for my program this year, and I came across that program, so I went through it. So I was like, oh, good on the colleges for recognizing it now. They had like videos of various scenarios of, I guess, doctors in different situations like burnout or I think they had one video where they had a doctor who failed their exams and how he got help in the end because he was getting depressed and all that. So I thought that was great from for the College of Physicians for doing that.
Do you think that's translating into real life, though?
Well,
because you do see doctors across the board still having recurrent problems.
Yeah, exactly.
That's some hospitals worse than others, but it's still the same theme. Mm. So, you know, it makes me wonder a lot of the time, are they putting words just on paper or into action as well?
Yeah. When I did the program, I you know, it looked good. Like, you know, like I went through it quite okay. But I think in real life, it will be difficult. I feel that we need to be a bit more, I guess, more active in kind of probably supporting doctors through burnout in hospitals. I felt that that's not much support when I was a registrar fellow, or, you know, resident. There wasn't much support at all. As you said, Cheryl, they talk about it all the time, but actual support, not really. But I guess just back to, I guess, my own journey. So I had the spinal cord injury. And I guess that was a physical toll on my body. I had to take 2 years off work to do intensive physical rehabilitation. Eventually, I got back to walking from being wheelchair bound for 2 or 3 years to walking again. But, you know, having to deal with a spinal cord injury and working pretty much full time and then having my son later on, that took its toll and I eventually burnt out. But I guess I did what a lot of my fellow peers are doing. Like we know our warning signs, we feel it, but we just choose to ignore it and push through it. And that's...
So did you go back to work very soon after the accident then?
I went back to part-time work about a year after the injury in my wheelchair. So that was an interesting experience. But I had a really amazing experience because my boss at that time was very supportive, and he made my working environment so like wheelchair friendly, and he made the whole process of returning back to work part-time so seamless. And I think it really matters who the boss is and how willing they want to go the extra mile to help. So I had a really...
did you go there full-time, part-time
a year after my injury. Then I took 2 years off work. Then when I came back from the United States, because I went to the United States for my rehabilitation. And then when I came back, probably about 2012, I went back to part-time because I still had to do part of my rehabilitation. Yeah, I still had to do rehabilitation for my injury. I went back to full-time work pretty much in 2014 as a third-year rehabilitation registrar. Because I had to sit for my fellowship exams because I was just watching my fellow peers, you know, being physicians. And here I am, you know, still, I guess, trying to balance work and doing outpatient therapy and then studying for exams at that time. So I was falling behind. But that's okay because I worked like 10 times, I studied 10 times harder, but I caught up in the end. So I passed my fellowship exams at first go in 2014.
Oh, so great.
And then I had my son, Joe, in 2015. And then after I had Joe for about 4 months, this is pretty early, I went back pretty much to full-time work. Probably wasn't a good idea at that time. I went back to full-time work as a final year rehab registrar in early 2016, probably about February. And that probably was a significant contributing factor to the burnout because I was just trying to finish up my rehab training so that I can qualify as a rehab physician in August 2016. And then I decided to do a pain fellowship. There is a backstory behind my pain fellowship, though.
Sounds like, Olivia, you had so much going on. You had like major spinal injury.
Yes,
you're
still
in a wheelchair. You went back to work.
Yeah.
While doing rehab yourself,
yes,
and then set for exams. That all, even me thinking about it, is making me tired.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness, like, how did that feel like at the time? Do you think you were pressured within the system to go back to work that soon?
Not really,
though. Do you think?
I think it could have waited, but I think I wanted to see for myself whether I was able to go back to work, because I guess with such a severe spinal cord injury like I had, I lost like feeling and movement below my waist for a period of time, and then I struggled with getting movement back. So I wanted to test myself out to see whether I was able to do my usual work as a doctor, and I was able to. So I was quite pleased with that. So that's one box ticked, I guess. But the reason why I was so driven to not only return back to work and walk and get to some kind of normalish life was my driving force to, to just walk again. That was, I thought about it day in, day out. I just wanted to walk again. And I guess any fellow spinal cord injury survivors, or anyone with a neurological injuries, will always want to have the desire to, if they lost the ability to walk, they always want to want to pursue that as one of their primary goal. And that's what I did. I went all the way to the United States for 2 years, and with along
Why
my
the US?
Well, yes, a lot of people actually asked me that. So my husband came along with me as well. We packed our bag and moved there for 2 years. The US was a place where they had obviously the latest technology in terms of exoskeletons to help paraplegics or quadriplegics walk again. They also have robotics and state-of-the-art gym equipments. But most important of all, the trainers or specialists over there were very driven and motivated to help clients like myself walk again. And that was what I felt was lacking here in Australia, where, because I'm a rehab physician and I look after patients with disabilities and things, but a lot of the time we try to get them, I guess, to adapt to their disability, but not giving them the extra chance to prove to themselves that they can do more, like whether they can walk again or whether they can use their arms again, like things like that. So,
Tell us a bit about what rehab you did over in the US, because that sounds very interesting, the use of exoskeletons and robotics in a rehab setting.
I was able to use what they called the LOCOMAT, which is like this treadmill system, but I have like it's a bit like RoboCop. I don't even know whether RoboCop is the right word. Maybe not RoboCop from the waist down. Like they had like exoskeleton attached to a treadmill, and that particular exoskeleton just helped me, like it simulates walking patterns along the treadmill. Think about a mice. I think they've done experiments on this where they have dissected the spinal cords of mice, and they made them do like treadmill training. It's quite, yeah, I'm not sure how, but they managed to do that. And the mice were able to walk along the treadmill because they were using their CPGs, or what we call central pattern generators, where it's basically like retraining the spinal cord and the brain to walk again. So the mice was able to do that. And I guess quite a number of researchers in America was able to use that particular model to design equipments and exoskeletons and robotics to help simulate walking patterns in humans, and they've done that. So I was able to use the LOCOMAT in the United States, and also they have quite advanced gym equipment that I was able to use because I had
Are
some.
the exoskeletons nerve stimulators, or they like muscle builders?
They are more muscle builders. The nerve stimulators don't. They're not. I think they're still doing some research on it. It's not. They haven't had any equipment. It's yeah, muscle builders. Because as the exoskeleton moves the legs, the muscles build up because it's still movement, you see, and the muscles do build up. Maybe not as much as we like, but that I did that combined with actually physically training myself to use my legs again. So I had to learn to walk again. Just think about how babies learn to crawl. They crawl first, and then they start to, obviously try to stand on their knees, and then they get up, and then they get a bit wobbly on their legs, and then they start walking. I went through the exact same process as
And that took like 2 years.
exactly, it took 2 years. It's yeah, crawling took a bit of time. Crawling wasn't easy.
Was that hard for you? You know, like learning to walk again as an adult?
I guess I was older and it was quite exhausting because I was basically exercising for about 5 hours each day, Monday to Friday. So it was quite exhausting, but at the end of the day, I felt quite happy and fulfilled because I did 5 hours of therapy, and I gave myself a chance, and I worked really hard, and hence I was able to walk again after 2 years. But I think it wasn't the I thought that it would be the exoskeleton and all this fancy equipment, and being able to walk again was the only goal I achieved. But being in, I guess, Project Walk, where I went when I went, which I went through for my rehabilitation, just connecting with other spinal cord injury survivors, being so mindful of my exercises, because I have to, if I were to learn to walk, if I had to learn to walk again, I had to practice mindfulness in everything I do because I was so focused and attentive on every single thing I did. And I think what helped me was that I eventually accepted myself for who I was and accepted, and yeah, and I didn't, because initially I struggled with self-worth and self-image because having to adjust a life in being in in a wheelchair was really quite hard for me. I was suffering from the inside. I was yeah, it was I was so angry at why the injury happened to me, and I was really, I guess, sad to see myself in that state, and watching all my peers going on to become physicians, and I was just stuck in a wheelchair. So it was hard, but what Project Warp, the connections I had with all those friendships I made, and the training and the grueling training I did, was the life lesson of self-compassion was what it taught me. That was a lot more meaningful than the actual being able to walk again. That was actually the healing piece of my whole spinal cord injury recovery experience. And yeah.
Was there anything in particular that happened that made you go from not having any self-worth to realizing that you had self-worth and how important self-compassion and mindfulness was?
I felt that my experience, like, just it's the connections with the not only the spinal cord injury survivors, it's with my trainers too. Because you think about it, I train with these specialists or trainers for 5 hours each day, Monday to Friday. We develop very strong friendships as well. And there were many times I felt like giving up. I was crawling, and I was like, it was so painful to be dragging weights on the floor, and they made me do stuff like bear crawls and all kind of very very heavy intensive exercises. And I think I nearly I guess gave up at many, many points in those 2 years, but my trainers just made sure that I they encouraged me and made sure that I kept going. And they not only made me believe in myself, they taught me a lot of how you say they was just so such positive people, such very high vibe, energetic individuals who are so passionate about what they do.
Yeah, that's great.
That's probably helped me believe in myself because I thought I will never be able to walk again. And each time I nearly gave up, they just, like stood there next to me every step of the way, from taking my first step to walking, I guess, around the gym on my own several times. So that was what they taught me. They taught me lots of friendships and connection. That was what brought me, like healed me from the inside out. And when I went back to Melbourne in 2012, I was a very different person. I felt that I had expanded and grown as an individual, and I was able to be compassionate as a rehab registrar. Like, I really enjoyed interacting with my patients. I think they saw, because I guess I'm walking with sticks, so they probably have gathered that I went through a similar experience like theirs, and they could relate to me better. And yeah, I felt that I could connect on a much deeper level with my patients. When I went back to Melbourne, I faced probably another challenge. I started, I guess, starting to self doubt myself again, because now I was back to full-time work. I had quite a few bosses starting to, I guess, being quite skeptical of my clinical experience, you know, having been away for 2 years and coming back. Quite a number of them were actually skeptical of my...
That must have been devastating.
Oh, yeah.
Because as doctors, you know, it's all-encompassing for us, isn't it, medicine? And to have someone sort of say, nah, you can't do it, that must be devastating.
Yeah, and I remember very clearly one of my bosses actually gave me a poor performance review because he felt my medical knowledge wasn't up to scratch. I think he was the only one who gave that feedback, even though the other supervisors were quite all right. They were quite happy with my performance. So I felt that I was being judged, and that really affected my self-worth once again.
Did they offer help? I mean, if they knew you'd been away for that long, was there any help offered, both, you know, like emotionally, physically, and also to help with your clinical work?
Yeah, the answer is no. There wasn't any help at all. So I had a new network of friends, I guess. You know, being my peers have already gone on to become physicians, so I've obviously made new friends, other rehab registrars who are starting out, you know, like first years. So I had a new, peers that I studied with. And so that helped me, I guess, go through along the training program. And I had a study group at the end of, at the end of my training program as well to prepare for the exams. But the answer is, Cheryl, no, I didn't have any support getting back to, in terms of upskilling, up-leveling on clinical knowledge and all that. No, I had to just...
That's rough, because that's what I mean. A lot of these colleges can say, we do this and we offer this, but kind of translating that from paper to action is a whole different thing altogether, isn't it?
Exactly. So the rehab college, on the other hand, was pretty supportive. I have to say they were pretty supportive with my return to work. They allowed me to work as long as part-time I needed. So that's probably the thing that I really appreciated from them. They allowed me to work as part-time as I wanted, and they didn't rush me back into the training program. But what I felt disappointed was actually one of the ex-bosses that I had. Like they were starting to be quite judgmental and starting to... You know, there's some, negative biases there and all that kind of thing that affected me as a individual for a little while. But eventually I managed to, obviously, after 6 months, I rotated to another workplace and they were very supportive. And I had a whole different experience. But yeah, with that particular boss, I wasn't too happy.
I think we've all had one of those.
Yeah.
So how has your experiences now translated into helping other doctors with difficulties at work and burnout and navigating these issues?
Yeah, so I guess, as you know, having been through burnout, you know, like my burnout experience was probably really eventuated in mid-2019. I was a newly, qualified pain physician at that time, and I took too much too soon. And, you know, I was juggling motherhood. I just finished my exam, so I was still quite exhausted and a little bit burnt out by that time. And I was pretty much, trying to take a lot of things, like, as people who are newly qualified, like physicians, we tend to take too much too soon. I'm afraid I did that too. And hence, that led to my burnout experience. And
it's probably an accumulation of what happened over the last 10 years as well.
Yeah, it's probably burnout from life in general, I will say.
Yeah.
I took 2 months off work, but that physically I felt better, but emotionally, spiritually, and mentally, I didn't. And I only, I guess... learn to manage my burnout better during, strangely, in the pandemic last year, because I was working from home, or I had to because I was pregnant with Jacqueline at that time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had to work from home, but I didn't have to travel to work, which gave me, quite a fair chunk of time to focus on things like personal development, meditation, and mindfulness, and things like that. That's what I did, and I went on to get life coaching for myself because I was going on. Oh, I can't possibly live a life like, just burning out left, right, center, all the time. And that's what I did. And I went through life coaching myself for about 6 months, and I felt enlightened. And I started to set up a coaching business as a leadership coach to help, I guess, junior, like doctors, not just junior doctors, specialist fellows, doesn't matter, even medical students in whichever stage of their journey they are in, burnout is a very real, I guess, dilemma. I wouldn't say it's a
And
problem.
it's also dangerous,
Yeah,
isn't it? Very
exactly.
dangerous.
And just seeing my peers burning out, like pain physicians have a very high burnout rate because our patients are so highly complex from not only a pain management perspective, from a trauma, they have a very complex trauma history. And day in, day out, when we interact with these patients, it's inevitable we get vicarious trauma. And that was a big part of very high burnout rates in pain physicians, or this is based on my observations, not only in what I've observed, and apparently in the United States is a big issue as well, and Canada. So I guess seeing my peers burn out, seeing myself burn out, seeing my predecessors burn out, and actually what really got to me was when I hear stories of like junior doctors, suffering through burnout to the point they're getting mental health issues. And for some of them, unfortunately, they have committed suicide. And this is something that we don't talk about very much. Just like bullying, we don't talk about it, but it's a very big issue. Yeah, this is the kind of things that we just say, oh yeah, suicide, and then we just ignore it. But I couldn't just sit there and ignore the statistics and all this, I guess observations that I've seen as a physician. So that was the whole premise behind my coaching business and my speaking and I guess author business. I have a book coming up, The Heart-Centeredness of Medicine, which is coming up in August. So do support
Right.
me, medical moms. I'll need your support in launching the book. It's basically about the 12 secret ingredients to nourishing a doctor's soul. So that's the title. That's the essentially what my book's about, is to help doctors,
Excellent.
yeah, thrive at work and at home and not burn out. That's the whole
Can you give us
premise.
a quick snippet? Like, because obviously prevention is key with anything in medicine, and I think more so with learning to juggle prevention of burnout and mental health issues, because unlike physical issues, it's not always that easy to identify, is it?
Exactly. I think a lot of the early signs of burnout, it could be mixed as probably just normal, we perceive as normal exhaustion from our work. And that was my own journey because I thought, oh, why am I feeling more tired than usual? And then why am I feeling more irritable than usual? And I thought, oh yes, because of my work, I'm seeing patients with chronic pain. That must be very normal in my work. So I thought that was normal, and my colleagues were all facing the same, they were all going through something similar, lots of feelings of stress and being quite irritable themselves. And I was seeing very similar signs among my colleagues. And I was thinking, oh, this is probably normal part of my work as a pain physician. But little did I know that that was my early warning signs of burnout. And then the other signs started to creep up. For example, like, starting to doubt my abilities and my skills. That was one of my other signs of burnout that I identified with. And I started, withdrawing and avoiding socializing, not only with my family, just with my friends as well. That was one of the red flags, I guess, if you want to call it. and feeling quite cynical and lacking empathy. That was another one.
And I think that I hear that as a very common sign of burnout, the lack of empathy and just getting very angry and cynical about life and work. And what do you suggest? Like if we do start to catch ourselves and we go, hold on, this sounds like something's going on, what do you think we should do?
I have I do a check-in. It's like a checklist, but it's kind of my own self-check-in. Like, you know, as doctors, we like to categorize our symptoms and stuff. I do the exact same thing. I have the four, I guess I use my four pillars of burnout check-ins. I do it daily, actually. It's physical, whether I'm feeling like physically exhausted. Am I sleeping enough? Am I even eating enough? Am I even exercising? So those are the basic, you know, we call it Maslow's basic human needs. And then we talk about emotional. Am I angrier and more impatient than usual? Am I starting to be quite snappy at my colleagues, my patients, and my family? You know, that's more like emotional. And am I being teary or things like that for over little things? And feeling no hope about life and work in general. So that's probably what we call depersonalization. And from the mental, I guess, pillar checklist of burnout will be like, am I feeling more anxious than usual? Am I feeling like quite, I guess, shaky sometimes because of vicarious trauma? Our nervous system will be primed as well. So we're starting to be like easily startled, easily jolted.
Hypervigilant,
exactly. I'll be developing some type, not PTSD, because that's really like quite severe, but early signs of it. Vicarious trauma is like PTSD, but probably the other spectrum, I guess. And spiritual pillar of check-in, like burnout check-in. Am I starting to not being, you know, to go out to fall, you know, like, you know, being in with nature is like connecting with your soul, and then I'll be checking in. Have I not meditated for a long time? Have I not been journaling anymore? Have I ignored just even going out for a walk to be in touch with nature? So I try to do, if we can't do daily check-ins, even weekly check-ins is healthy as well. Yeah, I do it daily because it's really important for my own well-being and I guess,
that's actually a very, very good checklist, to be honest. Yeah. I've never heard of it, but that's actually really good.
Yeah.
Now, the last question, but the most important one, where do we go for help? Where do we go for help if we feel like we are burning out?
Yeah. I guess based on my own experience, I saw my GP because I thought, you know, I just want to exclude anything sinister, I guess, like, not sinister, you know, sinister, yes, and other things like thyroid function tests or iron deficiency. So I saw my GP first. And I think that's a good port of call if, you know, if you're starting, I guess, if a doctor is starting to feel signs of burnout and they are, you know, they need help, I think seeing the GP is a good first point of call. And after the GP has done the necessary tests, we've excluded all the, you know, the physical causes of burnout, like, you know, thyroid function, thyroid issues, autoimmune illnesses or things like that. Then we can focus on the four pillars again, which I like to use pillars. you know, the spiritual, emotional, physical and mental pillars of burnout management or strategy. I call it strategy, probably.
And everyone. Because you say you practice mindfulness every day. Is there a specific way or a program that you can recommend?
Yeah, I highly recommend Insight Timer, which is a free app on the iPhone. They have lots of meditations in there. So, yeah, you have plenty of choices. And I guess another way of getting help will be to see, to see a coach, you know, like myself. You know, I help particularly junior doctors who are going through burnout from exam stress. That's a big part of burnout. And also juggling motherhood and work. Motherhood and work. as well as just doctors in general feeling quite low energy and exhausted at the end of the day, and feeling quite unfulfilled with their life just because of the burnout. So I help them become more heart-centered leaders. I help them, give them some strategies in through my coaching, so that they can,
I guess, recenter themselves, isn't
recenter
find themselves again.
Yeah, recenter themselves, help them feel more balanced and energized at the end of a long day, with more personal time off, which is really important, especially as medical moms, we need that.
Yeah. Look, I agree with that so much. It's just finding time for yourself, isn't it?
Exactly.
And in terms of one of the spiritual pillars, how do you connect with that again?
I guess for my, how I, came up with the spiritual pillar of burnout, management, will be my own experience. I found self-compassion to be really helpful, like the practice itself. And there's this also three. I have a self-compassion formula that, I made this such a way that people can remember it really well, especially for my clients. So self-compassion formula has three things. Well, first of all, it's just being aware that we are suffering. Like like we're talking about burnout, that's a form of suffering. Acknowledging that we are suffering. And the second part of the formula will be connection with ourselves and other people. And the last part of the formula will be self-acceptance, which is accepting things for what they expect. Accepting our imperfections and for who we are, and then making a choice to move forward. That encompasses the self-compassion formula. And that's also makes part of my spiritual pillar for burnout management. So that's one. And my other spiritual pillar will be things like meditation, mindfulness. That also makes part of that. And most important of all, like just taking a walk in nature. And I know a lot of medical moms in the group they love trekking, going through hiking and traveling, which unfortunately we haven't had much of due to COVID. But
yeah,
just getting in touch with nature, walking and all that, that's already the spiritual pillar of burnout management.
Yeah,
we have to just schedule in time to do that. But because
it's something that we all know, but we don't do enough of. I know that I'm definitely. Yeah, lacking. But look, these are all such great tips. Now, how do we look for your book? That's the next question.
Yeah, so I've got a website, DrOliviaLeeOng.com. So that has my speaker page, my my pre-launch page for my book, as well as my coaching business. So it's all on that website. So if any medical mom wants to, just have a read, and I have a freebie there as well on imposter syndrome, which is what all of us medical moms have to deal with a lot.
Oh, that's a whole different podcast altogether.
I know. I'm sure there are other medical moms who can obviously talk about that too.
Yeah.
But my website has everything. So feel free to look up free resources on my website. And if you want to, if you need extra support, feel free to connect with me. I've got a Facebook group as well, the Heart-Centered Medical Female Entrepreneurs. Feel free to send a request to be invited to the group, and I'll connect with any of you.
Great. Look, Oliva, thank you so much for taking time out today to talk to us. It's so good to be reminded about burnout. We all do it. It happens to every one of us, but it's so nice to be reminded that there are things that we can do to not only recognize the problem and to have insight, but to also help, which I think is so important. Well, thank you, and good luck with your book. Let us know on Medical Mums when it finally gets published. Good luck with everything. And thank you once again.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Oliva. No worries. We'll speak to you soon.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Olivia.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
That concludes today's episode of Medical Mums Chat. Thanks for tuning in today and listening to Olivia's story. If you or anyone you know is suffering from symptoms of burnout, please consider seeing your GP or give Lifeline or Beyond Blue a call. If you would like to tell us your story, please get in touch. And in the meantime, please look after yourself and each other.